Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the Outdoor Adventure Series podcast. The Outdoor Adventure Series celebrates individuals and families, businesses, and organizations that seek out and promote the exploration, stewardship, conservation, and access and enjoyment of the outdoors. Our guest today is Pauline Frommer. Pauline is the co-president of Frommer Media. She's the editorial director of Frommer's Guidebooks and Frommer's.com. She is a best-selling author. Her most recent book is Frommer's New York City 2024. And she is also the host of the Frommer's podcast. Pauline, it is a pleasure to see you again. And I'm so grateful that you agreed to show up on my podcast.
Well, I'm excited. It should be fun. It was so nice to meet you at the Travel and Adventure Show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, it was. And you were fantastic up on stage. Now, you delivered your presentation like both days, right?
Yeah. And I do a new presentation every year because things in travel, especially since the pandemic, things are changing rapidly. And so, yeah, I have to start from scratch every year with the advice I give.
I can only imagine because it just constantly changes. And I had my cell phone up and you had a couple of those slides. And our mutual friend, Chez Chezik, who's the executive director of the Outdoor Writers Association of America, he and I were sitting next to each other as we were listening to you on the first day. And it was like taking pictures of, oh, that's a good site to, because I sit at a computer a lot doing coaching, yeah, podcasting. And I really do need to travel more. So I think you provided a lot of great advice.
The reason you were taking photos is I try to be green. So I don't give out handouts anymore. So I tell people to take photographs of the things I put up on the screens of like the best search engines for travel, names of different companies that do eco-friendly adventures, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, did you present at all of the travel shows? Because I know there's like about a half a dozen of them or more.
There's some coming up. I'll be soon in Phoenix. And the only ones I'm not doing this year are the Bay Area and Atlanta.
Okay. You might meet my friend Rick Says. He's the podcast host of the Outdoor Biz podcast. So I'll make sure Rick comes up and says hello.
Right.
So I have to say I'm probably aging myself, but I grew up with Frommer's. I mean, the guidebooks. I know we want to talk about today and what's present, but I'd love if you could, for our audience, share a little bit, maybe a 30, 40,000 foot view of the background of the Frommer's brand.
Well, the Frommer's brand all came from my dad, Arthur. Yeah. He's 94 today and we run the business together. Okay. Yep. He's still around. And it was all a fluke in a certain way. On the day he graduated from law school, he got drafted into the army. The Korean War was raging. And luckily, the day before he would have been sent to Korea, somebody figured out that he spoke Russian and German. He was the son of immigrants. And so they had taught him that. He had also studied those subjects in school. And so instead of being sent to Korea, which was a really bloody conflict, in fact, half of the troop that he trained with didn't make it home. So this was the greatest stroke of luck in his life. He was sent to Berlin to work as a spy. But that's another story. And while he was there, he just started traveling all around. It was right after World War II. Europe was still in rubble. And so most of his fellow GIs just stayed on the base. They were nervous about traveling. They thought if they didn't have much money, they wouldn't have a good time because of the state of Europe at that point. And when he would get back to the base, they would pepper him with questions. And so he thought, well, why don't I do a little guidebook? So he wrote and self-published a little book called The GI's Guide to Europe. Mm-hmm. And then it became a bestseller in the Army. When he got out of the Army, he wrote Europe on $5 a Day, which became the best-selling guidebook of all time. Oh, yeah. And that kind of launched the Frommer Guides. And since then, we've remained proudly journalistic, which means nobody ever pays to be mentioned in a Frommer's Guide. Right. We only mention the places that we think are worth covering. And nowadays, we use local journalists because we think those people are going to be the folks who have the inside track, who are going to really know the destination they're covering.
That is amazing. And I'm not going to mention the other two names, but I literally remember your dad on TV. And I always used to love, you know, what he would share about these destinations. It's just, you know, so when I had the chance to meet you, and it's like, oh, wow, I know this brand. This is fantastic. And I would imagine the books that are behind you, and for our listeners, behind Pauline is this humongous bookshelf and lots of editions. And I imagine they're all around you.
Yeah, okay. I'm getting a lot of sunlight in. It looks like I'm in heaven. So
there you,
apologies on the lighting. It's getting strange. But anyway.
Oh, it's all good. Now, I have to ask, how did you end up in the family business?
Well, I actually was an actor in my teens and early 20s. I toured the country in the Broadway National Tour of Les Miserables.
Okay.
And I made a living doing a lot of voiceovers and musicals. Mm-hmm. And but always in between acting gigs, along with waitressing, my father would tap me to help him with assignments.
Okay.
And can't even remember the year, but basically the year when the internet became a thing.
Okay.
The people who then were publishing the Frommer's Guides asked my father to help create Frommer's.com.
Oh, wow.
And nobody knew anything about the web. And he brought me along. And I realized that I was enjoying editing and writing more than I was acting. And so I made the switch. I was very lucky to be able to come in with no journalistic background. But I studied at a good university. I studied history and philosophy. And mm-hmm. and those two things are really great for travel writing.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, being an actress is an actor is wonderful. Being a starving actor, actress is not so wonderful. Hence the being a wait staff in a restaurant. And I have to say, what you're doing, being able to get out there and explore and immerse yourself in cultures and destinations. It's a wonderful life.
I'm incredibly lucky. It's a great family business. I don't know if I would have followed my father if it was dry cleaning, but I really, really lucked out. And we are very proud of not only opening up the world to so many generations, because I still believe that travel is not only one of the best educations you can give yourself, but I think it also furthers the cause of world peace. If we get less scared of one another, we're more less likely to attack one another. So I'm proud of that. And I'm proud in this current climate that we keep so many journalists around the world working. It's been a real bloodbath in journalism. And for many of the folks who work for us, we're their last gig. So when you support guidebooks, you are keeping journalists working.
I think that is an important point. When I was introduced to the OWAA, I came in as a fluke because I have a business podcast, but I moved to Las Vegas and I wanted to get out to the desert and the stars and take pictures of the Milky Way. And so I had to start to do that research. And that's how I discovered the OWAA and have had the opportunity to meet a lot of journalists, freelance journalists, who are just passionate about their particular niche. And it's what you just said is very, it's in some ways poetic, because the industry was decimated and you're giving it life because of these travel opportunities.
And continues to be decimated right now because of AI. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people asking AI chatbots to answer their travel questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so many publications just in the last 6 months have lost a full quarter of their traffic, which is really, really frightening.
Yeah.
Noam Chomsky, the great left-wing writer, basically said recently, we shouldn't be calling it artificial intelligence. What this is a plagiarism machine. I mean, AI trained on our content. Yes. Our copyrighted content. So I'm looking for a lawsuit to join on that front.
Okay, fair enough. So let's talk about fun stuff, because there's the dark side. But let's talk first off, Frommer's Guidebooks and Frommer's.com. And I love the fact that you were on the cutting edge of the .com era, and obviously you have survived the COVID era. But what is it that makes the Frommer's Guidebook so relevant and Frommer's.com so relevant today?
Well, there's a couple of ways to answer that. Very quickly, every guidebook series that's out there has a different audience. Mm-hmm. And our guidebooks have always been written for the American audience. Okay. And Americans, sadly, take the least vacation time of any Western nation. And so our guidebooks have always been highly curated, because we know our readers, unlike, say, Lonely Planet readers — Lonely Planet was created for Australians — those guys are always on the road. And so they're trying to be encyclopedic, whereas we're trying to say, no, you have limited time. This is really going to be worth your time. You can skip this. We try to shoot from the hip. We'll tell people what doesn't work as well as what does. We just try to be really honest with our readers and help them with the hard stuff, like putting together good itineraries. Mm-hmm. That's a really hard thing when you're trying to conceptualize in advance of a trip. How do I spend my time? And what we always advise is some of your time should just be left open so you can just wander and explore and find things. But there are other things you're going to want to see. And so we try to be very blunt with our advice. As well, because we're journalists, we visited every single hotel in the area and are only recommending the ones we think are worth your while. The same for restaurants, the same for attractions, the same for shops. You go to like a TripAdvisor and, you know, you're looking for hotels, you're going to get the advice of somebody who stayed at exactly one hotel. Mm-hmm. And so they may not know that right down the road is a place that's cheaper and better. And I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're human, because you have a lot of AI-generated garbage reviews on every site right now. So a lot of what you read on the internet is disguised marketing. When you go to a travel site like ours or the Frommer Guidebooks, you're getting actual journalism.
All right. Yeah, I have a website that I go to. Frankly, I don't know why I go to it, but it every square is a top 10 this, top 10 that. And I know those are all AI generated. And because one feature actually contradicts another feature. And it's just like, we're just over, and that, I think, leads to the overwhelm. It's like, I'm just not going to go anywhere because I'm overwhelmed by the decision I have to make. What advice is provided in the books when somebody wants what I would call a more immersive experience? Like, I love to cook. I love to cook in a kitchen with a trained chef. I love farmers markets. I'm a photographer or an amateur. Decent amateur photographer. So I love taking pictures in farmers markets. And how do you also share this type of advice for somebody that wants not just to go to the museums and the covered bridge or the — I was just chatting with somebody about a covered bridge in Tennessee. That's why I said that. but how about the more immersive experiences? How do the guidebooks fill that kind of need as well?
There's a common cliche in travel writing that people talk about, that people put in their articles. They say, the guidebooks won't tell you this. Well, the truth is, our guidebooks are all several hundred pages long.
Yeah.
And we need to fill them. And so, for example, as you said at the start, I write the New York City Guide. I cover the great farmers markets in our city. Mm-hmm. I also tell you about which cooking classes you'll meet locals at and get training from the city's incredible genius chefs. So we have a lot of pages to fill. So we're not just covering the top of the pyramid touristically. We're also covering a lot of niche interests in our guides. We have to. We have we've got to fill a thick book.
Okay. Speaking of the size of the book, how many pages is a book typically?
Oh, gosh, it depends on the destination. Like, okay. Let's see, this is our teeny tiny Yellowstone and the Grand Tetons. And we made this one especially so that people could put it in their backpack. This is the last edition of France. We actually moved to a new paper, so it doesn't look that big, but it's actually 540 pages long.
Oh, wow.
So it depends.
Okay. Now, a book like your newest one, Frommer's New York City 2024, how long from this idea that, okay, it's time to write it? Well, I guess I would ask this question. How does a book like that come to pass? When does this idea spark that we need to write a new book, and the length of time it takes to actually create it and get it published?
Well, there aren't many new destinations, and we've been around since 1957.
Okay.
So I think the spark and the idea for which destinations to cover came a long time ago. Okay. That being said, in my father's day, nobody went to Belize. Very few people went to Thailand. So in more recent years, we've added those titles. Now we update the books.
Okay.
So to give New York as an example, since I've been doing that recently, in 2023, the perfect storm happened in New York City. On September 18th, Airbnb and all short-term rentals became illegal in the city.
Okay.
And so overnight, we went from 50,000 Airbnbs down to 7,000.
Mm.
And then, because we've had so many migrants sent to us by the southern states and also just arriving here, I think it's something like 100,000 migrants. Because New York City is a sanctuary city, we have a law from, I think it's 1988, that anybody who asks for sanctuary has to get it. So that has meant that a lot of the cheap hotels that I covered in my book for literally a decade are now being used to house migrants. And that, combined with the lack of short-term rentals, has in many cases doubled the cost of lodgings in New York City just in the last 6 months. And so to update the book this time, I had to, for the first time, include New Jersey.
Mm.
So I've been driving all around New Jersey. I don't tell them who I am because I want to make sure I see the actual hotel rather than what they want me to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm adding a whole bunch of places that you can get to very easily on public transportation that are going to be more affordable right now than New York City. So that was a vast change to this year's book. Sometimes the changes aren't that big, but there are always new restaurants to write up. There's often new museums. There's hours change. I mean, there's lots to see and do in a dynamic destination like New York City.
Okay. Now, in your guidebooks, you have overviews. You have the sites. You have backgrounds about the sites. You have photos. Travelers still make mistakes, or they do think, you know, like, what was I thinking? How do your guidebooks help the traveler, somebody like me? Because I tend to research everything, and then I make my decisions. I don't mind going somewhere and just dropping in, and I can make do. But I'm a planner. But how do the guidebooks help the traveler perhaps prevent some of the more common mistakes that they might make? I mean, how are they being assisted?
I think one of the most common mistakes people make is they know what they want to see in a destination, but they don't realize that one place is at point A, which is over here, the next place is over here, and the next place is here. And then so instead of putting together logical itineraries, which group attractions geographically, they just wander all over the place and waste too much of their time just getting places. I think a lot of people also assume that they have to pay more to have a great travel experience. And that's not always the case. You can often get a really nice hotel for half of what you'd pay at a luxury hotel. And then you have more money to do the things that are, frankly, more important. I mean, you're unconscious for most of the time you're in a hotel. So right. long as it's well located and clean and quiet so you can sleep, you may not need to spend as much. And so we try and give our readers the tools to be smart in how they go at it. As well, I think people enjoy their vacations more when they bring something to them, when they bring open questions, when they read about the destination in our guidebooks and also maybe novels and history books. And when you watch TV shows and movies set in the destination so that your mind is just buzzing with ideas about what it's going to be like, too many people think, oh, I'll just drop in. And then they find it disappointing. And it's because they haven't done any background and they assume someone in the destination will be able to explain everything to them. And that's not always the case. I mean, you go to a place like Thailand or Vietnam, you're going to be spending a lot of time in temples. Mm. And if you don't understand what you're seeing, you're going to be bored to tears. Mm. So bringing some knowledge to it really helps. The same for outdoor vacations, quite frankly. Knowing about what mind-blowingly wonderful creatures redwood trees are, when you go to Redwoods National Park, as I did 2 years ago, it's all that more engaging.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I'm curious, speaking of these locations in Europe, Asia, Redwood, how has Frommer's responded to the needs of tourists that have disabilities, physical challenges, sight, mobility? How have you kind of addressed that those needs?
We have a lot of articles on Frommer's.com about that. And in every book, we have a section in the back giving tips to different types of travelers. So travelers with mobility, female travelers. Frommer's was the very first guidebook, mainstream guidebook series to include advice for LGBTQ travelers. We recognize that travel isn't a one-size-fits-all activity, that sometimes specific advice is needed. And so we do our best to include that. We probably could do better.
Okay. And I know you also have your annual guidebooks, the best places. I was looking at it online, but what can the reader or visitor to the website expect from the 2024?
Our best places to go list?
Yes.
We have guidebook writers all over the world.
Right.
And we poll them and say, what places are going to be especially visit worthy in the coming year? We think destinations are like wines. Mm. Some years they're really great, some years not so much. And so we say, what's going to be at peak performance in the coming year? Either because there's a special event that's going to have all kinds of really fun things to see and do surrounding it, or because it's a destination that's suddenly more affordable or more doable. Like, for example, the Cook Islands made our list this year because for the first time, 30 years, there's direct transportation there, which is game changing.
Yeah.
Or that could be a dupe for another destination. Mm-hmm. So a destination that's getting overloved, that's now too expensive. Well, this other destination is just like it.
Okay. So I am curious, and this is a little, that's not really a gotcha question because I know you're going to know this answer, but is there one destination that Maybe not annually, but consistently is at the top of the list? Or is that on this list of best places?
Well, we try to change it every year. We don't want to bore our readers. So there's no one destination that makes the list year after year. I can say there's one destination that is most popular in terms of our coverage and in terms of our guidebook sales. Can you guess what that is?
Part of me is going to say either New York, London, or Las Vegas.
Italy.
Italy.
Italy. Everybody wants to read about Italy.
Wow.
20 years.
I always said I will visit Italy when I'm in a relationship and or married. And mind you, I haven't been to Italy yet, but that's a whole other.
I think there's a kernel of something there. Mm-hmm. I think you're meant to go to Italy to meet your future spouse.
Right by the, was it the Trevi Fountain? Is that it?
Yeah, well, maybe not there because you'll meet another tourist, but an Italian people are just incredibly warm and outgoing and marvelous. And they have a really good education system in Italy where in the grade schools, they learn philosophy. They learn what the great Roman philosophers taught and what later philosophers. And so I think it's a nationality that is very good for love because they take a long-term view of things rather than just concentrating on the nitty-gritty. But I don't want to say anything about a whole nationality, but I do think that makes the Italians different, that they're a civilization that still takes philosophy seriously.
Very good. And they have nice cafes. You can sit down. They have a coffee.
Best. And the food is amazing and it's beautiful and you got to go.
Okay, Pauline, I commit to that. So I am curious, as from one podcaster to the next, how did you get roped into hosting the Frommers podcast?
Well, I did. I was on radio for a good 20 years, and my father and I used to do the show together. People tuned in to hear us argue because we would disagree about things, and people loved it. And unfortunately, at the height of the pandemic, my main radio station I was on went to an all-politics format.
Okay.
So I lost my spot. I'm trying to get back on radio, but the podcast was a way for me to keep our listening audience and to keep that all going until, knock wood, I can get back on radio. We'll see.
Okay. Is podcasting a way to extend the brand out to destinations in addition to hiring the writer to write about the hotel, the experiences, this piece of the city? To go out
well,
there.
Well, we
and
often have our guidebook writers on as guests, but I have a lot of people on as guests. You don't have to work Frommers for me to interview you. Many years ago, my dad ran a magazine, founded a magazine called Arthur Frommers Budget Travel.
Okay.
And there was a motto for the staff, which was, it's not about your vacation, it's about the readers.
Right.
And I kind of keep that going for the podcast, too. I always want to give information that I hope will make someone's vacation better. Or allow them to understand a culture they're visiting in a more rich way. So.
All right. Well, I think that is fantastic philosophy. And it is about the experience. And I certainly hope this episode we've shared things with our listeners that, oh, wow. And so that's a mark of a good episode. So I am curious also, and not to get fully back into politics, but I tend to be on the progressive side of the political spectrum. And there was a lot of talk about just transportation, infrastructure here within the U.S. And I'm wondering how this bill and the millions, billions that are going to get funneled into this, into the U.S., how is this going to improve travel and make what we do, what we're interested in, what we want to see, I don't know, this more, open up the doors for us?
Yeah. Two years ago now, Biden passed probably the biggest infrastructure bill since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I mean, it really was an extraordinary bill that is going to funnel billions into both green technologies and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And so how's that going to change how you travel? Well, it's going to actually make Amtrak pleasant. They're going to really redo Amtrak. They're going to make it much more accessible to people with disabilities. There's going to be better eating options, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. And there's going to be more high-speed trains, more Amtrak places that it's going, but also getting to and from the airport. There's a whole bunch of projects in the transom to create public transportation options that are green. So when you fly into a city, you're not stuck taking a really expensive taxi. So those are just two of the ways. It was really kind of shocking to me that bill passed with all that was in it. And it's really going to make life in so many ways. They're going to overhaul the, oh my goodness, what is it called? The guidance system for planes.
Okay.
What is that called? The people in the towers.
FAA.
The FAA. They're going to recall their whole system. The system currently is based on the early years of aviation. Right. When pilots were being guided by bonfires set on land. So basically they had electric replacements for the bonfires. But in this era of GPS, our pilots aren't using that really. So it's crazy. And so the FAA is going to be totally overhauled, and that'll make things safer.
I love it. It's funny, at the Denver show where I met you, I did fly in from Las Vegas to Denver. I love the train that takes you from the airport downtown into Union Station.
Yeah.
Yes, I had to wait an extra half hour, but, you know, a $10 train ride versus a $50 cab ride.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. That allows me to put more money into other pockets.
I did the same thing. It was pleasant. It was clean. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. And there was a posting this today on Facebook. A friend of mine who's very much an international traveler, he was sharing an infographic about the speed of the most advanced trains, the maglev trains, like in Japan and China, in Europe. And then you have the little Amtrak train. And I had friends that were on the Amtrak going from Seattle back to Denver, where they caught a plane. But I would just love to be able to travel by train from point A to point B, go out there, spend a day, come back.
Yeah. No, it's going to be life-changing. Unfortunately, most of those projects, they're not yet fully in place. But I think in a couple of years, people are going to look back and realize how important that bill was.
I certainly agree with that as well. Pauline, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on our podcast. Before we leave, though, this is maybe, again, putting you on the spot, but, you know, you have such a great history through your dad and what he has done. And again, it brought back a lot of memories because I can literally picture your father on TV. And the guidebooks, I mean, we don't even have bookstores anymore, but the used bookstores, your guidebooks are there.
We have bookstores. Barnes & Noble's apparently is going to be adding 50 new bookstores in the next year. That they're doing much better than they were. So Knockwood and the Indies, we all got to support them. Those are great community places. So support your local bookstore.
Of course. So what would you like, what piece of advice from your experience as travel, as a writer, in helping individuals like me do the planning, take advantage, and get off the beaten track just a little bit? But what advice would you give to our listeners who want to, say, embark on an adventure, but are just really not sure how to get started?
Wow, there's a lot of ways to answer that. I'm a member of a group on Facebook called Girls Love Travel. And there's a million people in that little group. It's not a little group, it's a big group. And somebody wrote that they were always wanted to travel, but they're a shy person. They always feel like an outsider. And think maybe one of the ways to get yourself out there is to remind yourself that everybody feels like an outsider, that we may have different levels of shyness, but in certain ways that exists in all of us. Mm-hmm. And that you get an endorphin rush when you talk with somebody, even if that person is a stranger. Mm-hmm. So pushing yourself forward, going into another, another culture or community, you can discover different parts of yourself. Mm-hmm. You can be proud of yourself for overcoming shyness. Mm-hmm. You can be a different person than you would be at home. Mm-hmm. There are so many incredible benefits to travel. The planning is a big part of it. Just get a good guidebook. We will not steer you wrong. But I think there's also a mental challenge to overcome because many people are shy.
Right.
So I think 99% of the folks who go out there and travel come back realizing that it was the best way they could have spent their money.
I love it. Thank you for gifting us with that insight to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So before we head out, if our listeners would like to learn more about you, the Frommer's brand, where are the best places for them to go? I know the answer already, but please share that with our listeners.
Well, go to your local bookstore. As I was saying, you'll find Frommer's books there. If you don't see them, go up to the counter and say, hey, why am I not seeing Frommer's guides? You should order them. Go to frommers.com on the web, which is spelled F-R-O-M-M-E-R-S. Lots of great timely articles there that will affect how you travel. Like we have one up right now about which Caribbean islands are safe, which are getting worse in terms of safety. And also, please, wherever podcasts are heard, if you look for the Frommer's podcast, I'd love to have you as a new subscriber.
You got it. And I just subscribed today. So thank you so much. Pauline, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast and really, truly grateful that you spent some time with us today and really, you know, shared more and expanded our awareness of Frommer's and just the history. And, you know, if you remember when you talk to your dad or visit him, just say, I was on an interview with this guy. He remembers you and thanks you. So that was.
I will do so. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Listen, stay in the line. We're going to do a real quick close and you and I can have a final chat. Okay. All right. Okay, folks, what a great episode with Pauline Frommer, co-president of Frommer's Media, executive director of Frommer's Guidebooks, and the author, best-selling author of Frommer's New York City 2024, podcast host and entrepreneur and world traveler. And just so much great information today. We really appreciate her making the time to visit with us. And again, I want to thank my friend Chez from the Outdoor Writers Association for making that introduction. And if people don't know it already, I'm a very opportunistic podcaster. So of course I want to go up to Pauline and say, hey, would you like to be on my podcast? And so it all worked out. Now do go out to their website at frommers.com, check out the podcast, and we'll have backlinks to it as well as to all of the social sites, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. And as for us, you can find us on the outdooradventureseries.com website. We'll have all the show notes, backlinks, maybe even some photos. Well, I haven't asked Pauline yet to share some photos with us. I'll have that conversation afterwards. You can find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. We're also going to have part of the video of this episode up on YouTube, as well as the full audio episode on YouTube. And of course, wherever you listen to your podcast, please like it, share, comment, and let us know what you think of today's episode or any other. And of course, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, go out there, have a phenomenal day, and we will see you on a future episode of the Outdoor Adventure Series podcast. Take care now.